Welcome, Max. How are you today?
I'm very good, Carrie. Nice to be here.
Thank you so much for coming. If anybody didn't hear me, because I don't know what I heard, but you're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com. This is Carrie Lee, and you're listening to Lifting the Veil. You can check us out on YouTube at Lifting Veils and our website, www.liftingtheveil.ca, and, of course, on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Today we are joined by Max Egan. If you didn't hear the intro, I think anybody listening knows exactly who he is. Musician, artist, author, world traveler, dear friend. How are you? A little jet lagged from your tour, I'm assuming.
Well, yeah, a little jet lagged. I got in at 12:30. I got home about 12:30 night before last. But I've kind of settled in okay. I got a fair bit of sleep on the flight. I made sure I readjusted my sleeping patterns well before I left. So, yeah, it's not too bad, really. Not as bad as I was going the other way when I went to Peru. When I left here, it took me 2 weeks to get my sleeping patterns right again, but I've sort of settled into the reverse journey pretty well.
That's fantastic. And you started out on your tour in July, right?
Yeah, the 30th of July or 31st of July. 30th, I think, of July I left for 2 weeks and ended up getting home 3 months later, yeah.
That's just amazing. From Peru, I'm just going to give the listeners a little bit of the itinerary. Peru, Costa Rica, Spain, Portugal, Belgium, Slovenia, England, Ireland, Egypt, Gaza, Egypt, Switzerland, England, Croatia, Holland, Malaysia, and then back home, settled in Australia in October, and here we are. Let's talk about your time in Peru a little bit.
The time in Peru was quite amazing, actually. I mean, that was the reason that I went, was to go on the journey to Peru. And it was remarkable that I went and did that before I went and did the whole global tour, because doing the time in Peru, it gave me a new perspective that I would not otherwise have had. When I started doing a few talks overseas, actually, I got sort of asked to do some speaking events, and I wasn't really prepared for them because I didn't go out across the world to do any speaking. I kind of went out to do a lot of listening because I knew there was something that I needed. I basically wanted to know how to take the message to the next level, you know, and then all of this stuff just manifested, you know, the trip to Peru, which was remarkable in itself, how that even happened. And I've told the story a few times, but for anybody who's missed it, I was actually having a calling to do ayahuasca, and I'd been, you know, there's all of this stuff led to it, and I was having this calling that I had to go and do ayahuasca ceremony, and I'd had it offered to me by various people for 2 years around the area where I live, and I never felt comfortable with the people offering me the ceremony. I'd always said to myself that, well, you know, I'd like to do it, but if I'm going to do it, I'll go to Peru and do it with a shaman in the traditional way. And I said this even though I didn't even have a passport at the time, and I knew the chances of me getting to Peru were very, very slim. And then suddenly I get a message over Skype, because I've been knocking back the ceremony. I've been refusing and saying, no, it's all good, for 2 years. Even though ayahuasca had been calling me, you know, this inner spirit had been calling me. And so I get a message over Skype saying, Max, unforeseen circumstances, happen to be stuck with a spare ticket to Peru to go and do an ayahuasca ceremony with a shaman, you know, a 9-day retreat with a shaman. Would you like the ticket? And so
that's fantastic.
Well, yeah, it was just a complete manifestation. It was like that the spirit was saying, well, okay, you're being stubborn. You want to go to Peru and do it with a shaman, do you? Okay, well, here it is. Are we heeding the call now? So I thought, well, I better go. So I went and applied for a passport, you know, because I hadn't had one for years. And off I went and mentioned it on the air. Then I got contacted by another listener who wanted to fly me to Costa Rica and over to the Hemp Congress in Slovenia, the World Hemp Congress. And so that all kind of manifested as well. But what happened in Peru was I did ceremony. I was there at a retreat for 9 days. And I did 4 ceremonies while I was there. And I learned something different with every ceremony. Every single one was completely different to the other one. But there was one particular ceremony where I had a huge connection with the Earth Mother, and I actually saw what we could be and what we're supposed to be and what our connection could be if our higher senses were all fully active. I mean, I've often talked about it and I've experienced glimpses of it in meditation. I've almost kind of downloaded the knowledge of it from the field when I had this massive experience back in 2008. It set me on this journey to discovering what this connection is. Yeah, I mean, I'd always known it was there. I mean, I'd done years researching ancient history and New World Order and all the stuff that we do. But this spiritual connection, this connection to Mother Earth, in this experience I had in 2008, I felt like we were the mind of the Earth, that the human race was indelibly connected to the mind of the Mother Earth, the goddess, the Gaia, the Sophia, whatever you want to call it, the female energy that we all feel that is part of this Mother Earth. I felt that we were the mind of the earth itself, and like there was a section of the mind of the earth that had been kind of taken and locked into a little cage and was being used to basically destroy itself, you know. It's like the mind of the earth was eating itself or something, and we were the instrument that was enabling that to happen. And what had infected our mind and all of this sort of stuff, what had caused us to leave that path of connection? And I've been looking for this for years. Why are we the way we are? What has put the human race in this state, and shouldn't we be more connected? And what would it be like to have that connection? What would it be like to have the instincts of animals and be able to read the energy field the way these ancient tribal cultures can, and the way the animals and all other life on this planet can? So these were my questions when I went into ceremony in Peru, and these are pretty deep questions, you know. And I got this connection in this one ceremony. There was one particular night when we're in the Maloka, and I'm there with 13 other people and four facilitators and the two shaman, and everybody was smoking the Mupacha tobacco that they use for ceremony, and I'm a non-smoker, and I just couldn't take it anymore in there, and I'd had one drink, I'd had a certain amount of insights come with that one drink, and then I'd had a second drink and decided, well, it isn't really working, the second drink. I think it's time for me to leave the Maloka and go and lie down. And I got up and started walking out, and one of the facilitators came and immediately helped me and got me out there. And I went up to my little tumbol where I was living, which was about 50 metres from the ceremonial Maloka where the ceremonies are held. And I lay back in my tumbol and by myself in the darkness. And I was just lying there in the darkness, and I had the sounds of the jungle all around me. And I could hear the shaman still singing off in the Maloka, just wafting in on the breeze, this soft shaman singing. And I had all the sounds of the jungle around me. And that's when the Earth Mother literally came to me. And all of the ancestors, the shaman came to me. The animals of the jungle came to me. And the jungle itself came to me. And it connected me to the jungle. The jungle itself literally told me its story. Now, I haven't even got the words to explain what this story is. I mean, it's all done with higher senses, the connections. It's almost like telepathy. But these spirits and these shaman and these languages and these entities are speaking to you, but it's not in a spoken language. So it was profound. It was incredibly profound. And I got this incredible connection with the Amazon jungle, and it told me its history. It told me its whole emotional journey, its conscious journey, because it's all conscious. I mean, all of reality is conscious. Consciousness creates reality. So, of course, reality is conscious. Everything is conscious because it's created by consciousness. And we can connect and talk and communicate with all of it if we choose to do so. The reason we can't in our society is because we've been trained to believe that it isn't possible, because we're caught in a world of magic spells, you know, like we're spelling reality by what we believe is possible. And we only believe what is possible by the language we know, because we think in language. So our whole definition of reality is defined by the language. Exactly. It disconnects us. We don't know things anymore. We only know what we're taught to know via the written word. And this is what I was talking about in my talk, so when I was away, and all this sort of stuff. This is the stuff that I was sort of gathering along the way through this journey and through the ayahuasca ceremony at the start. But the ceremony was profound because it showed me what that connection is. It showed me what we are supposed to be as shepherds and custodians of this reality, of this planet that we live on. Of course, we're supposed to be custodians of the planet. We can't live without the planet. We are so connected to the Earth. It isn't just a bunch of resources. This is our home. This is our home. This is our life. This is who we are. Without this rock that we're floating through space on, we're not in a very good place, you know. So we need to pay attention to this.
And at the same time as we have to be custodians to the Earth, we have to be like servants unto each other. And I don't mean in the lowly sense, obviously. I mean in the way that you're in service to your fellow man, you're in service to your fellow brother and sister. That's just the way that it is. And we've once again disconnected from that, and it doesn't need to be that way.
Exactly. And this is what I was gaining through all of this ceremony. I mean, I knew all of this anyway, but to have it spoken to me by the spirit and by the Earth Mother and by the forest itself. And while this was all going on, I mean, the Earth Mother was literally in front of me, and she was just there, only her face. I could only see her face. And she was huge, and she had emeralds studded on her face. And I'm looking at her thinking, this is a really vivid hallucination. Oh, my God, you know. But then it was real. It was three-dimensional. It wasn't a hallucination. I was literally seeing into another realm. You know, and I did all these tests because, of course, I'm locked in left brain. You know, you're locked in left brain. You're going to want to know what's going on here and go, wow, these are amazing hallucinations. And then I thought, okay, well, if they're hallucinations, I'll still see them with my eyes open or closed. And this was with my eyes open. And when I closed my eyes, I started seeing all these geometric shapes and stuff that was like hallucinations. I thought, okay, well, that's different. Then I opened my eyes again. It was just complete darkness. And then within 30 seconds, all of these things started fading in again. The Earth Mother was there again, and the shaman started all fading in. And they'd walk up. They'd see, oh, you're awake again. You're looking at us again. So they'd turn back, and they'd come back, and they'd lie down at the foot of the bed and just rest on their elbow and just watch you. And people would stand up at the foot of the bed, and they'd be communicating to you. They'd just have to move a finger, move an elbow, move a muscle, lift an eyebrow, and you'd know exactly what they were telling you. It was remarkable. And I had a jaguar run through the room. I had all sorts of amazing things going on. And I'm thinking, these are incredible hallucinations. This is all 3D. This is like I've actually got people in the room with me. And they're remarkable. The hue and the vibration of these people is incredible.
It's more so a different plane than it is.
Well, yeah, it was like I was seeing into another dimension. So I'm doing all these left brain tests. Okay, close my eyes. Okay, they've gone now. Okay, they're back now. Interesting. Okay, well, so it's happening with my eyes open. Okay, so I'll pull the blanket over my head, and I should still be able to see them because my eyes will be open. So I pull the blanket over my head, and I can't see them. All I can see is the blanket. I'm thinking, this is the most incredible blanket I've ever seen in my life. The energy flow of this blanket is incredible, you know. And I'm thinking all of this sort of stuff, and I'm thinking, well, why can I even see the blanket? I'm in the dark. And I'm seeing through the tiny little holes in the blanket that there's stuff going on the outside behind it. So I pull it down from my eyes, and they're still there. All this stuff, these shaman, all these people are in the room, and all of this telepathic communications going on. So then I started sitting back and actually listening to what they were telling me, because I'd done all the tests, you know. And this only took a matter of a few seconds to do all the tests, you know, a minute or two. So, you know, and this is, again, your left brain thinking, because, I mean, I've experienced things, and when you experience something like this, you think this is a hallucinogenic plant. This is creating these hallucinations. And then you start to understand, well, no, it's not. It's not a hallucinogenic plant at all. What it is a medicine. And what it's doing is it's opening up your higher faculties so you can see what's going on outside of visible light. That's what it's doing. It's not like it's not like LSD or something that people would take and they would get hallucinations, see things in different colors and all the sorts of stuff that happens when people take LSD. It's not like that. It's literally seeing into other realms. And so doing that ceremony and doing that journey to Peru to start off this trip around the world that came after it was quite remarkable, because it gave me an entirely different perspective. And it tied up a whole bunch of loose ends, and it put me in a completely different position to where I would have been had I not done the ceremony before the trip.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us. There's a lot of us right now that are contemplating the trip to Peru, and if anybody was swaggering on the, you know, the teetering edge of, well, I don't know if I want to go, I think you've changed your mind now. I absolutely love how you explained it, to understand that, that just all the cognitive tests that you did to make sure what was reality and what was, you know, the messages that you were being sent. That's quite brilliant. And you did how many ceremonies then? Four?
I did four in Peru. I ended up doing one before I left, which was remarkable as well, because I'd been refusing ceremony from people around here all the time. But after I'd been offered this trip to Peru and I'd accepted and it was all set that I was going, I got approached by a Venezuelan woman, about 24, 25, a very young shaman woman from Venezuela. And she'd come up from a city down south and she said she was up here. She was certain people she had to meet and she thought I was one of them. And she offered me ceremony. I was sort of wondering, you know, am I honoring the manifestation if I accept ceremony with this woman before I go? But it just felt right to do ceremony with this woman. So what happened was it was myself and five of my closest friends. There were six of us, and we all did ceremony together with this woman, facilitating her and a companion, or two companions that she had with her. So there were three people who were looking after the six of us. And it was absolutely amazing. It was very purging. It got rid of a lot of cellular memory and genetic memory from my body. It was very, very good, and it was a great preparation for what happened in Peru. But also it showed me what can be accomplished by doing this even in your own country. It had very, very beneficial effects. But what I experienced when I was in the jungle and did it was that connection to the earth. And there were people that had a connection to the mother in where I was. Like in the first ceremony, there was one of my companions who had a connection to the mother of all creation through the sky, basically. He was just out there looking at the stars, and the whole universe was communicating with him, you know. And that was his experience. But my experience when I was in Australia was one of cleansing of myself. But when I was in Peru, what happened was I connected with the spirit of Peru itself. So I would think that wherever you happen to be, it's going to connect you with the spirit of that particular area, or perhaps with the spirit of the mother, creation mother, or God, or whatever you want to call it, wherever you happen to be. I mean, I know this is all very esoteric and strange to people, but what I experienced in Peru, though, what I'm trying to say here, was very different to what I experienced in Australia. And it was that connection to the forest of Peru that I saw a real need to preserve this culture, and I saw why shamanistic tradition was deemed to be such a threat to the powers that be. See, when the whole system was formed, when the Crown Corporation was formed, and the whole Vatican system was put in place, and they went out and they had the Dark Ages, they went out and they started stomping on everybody and imposing religion in everybody's faces, the biggest threat to all of it was shamanism, you know, what they call paganism. And if you even mentioned paganism, it was punishable by death. You know, all of the knowledge of the plants, witchcraft, all this sort of stuff they called it, you know. But it wasn't witchcraft, it wasn't paganism, it wasn't pantheism, it wasn't any ism. All it was a connection to nature that is there and should be there. It was a connection to higher senses and to nature. But the church basically went out and it imposed this five-sense reality upon everybody. I mean, we were kind of locked into it anyway, but it totally solidified the deal. And it severed any connection that we had to nature. And what I experienced in Peru, what I experienced with the connection to the Earth Mother was so profound. And the connection to the Earth, it was so profound and so real. And I saw so clearly what we should be as shaman, as custodians, as shepherds, living in harmony, one with this Earth. What we would be capable of doing and becoming and where we could take this consciousness. It was profound. It was absolutely profound. And this is really the greatest threat, because even when you look at this system, you look at the system that we've got, everybody's speaking out against it, you know, about crashing the monetary system, crashing the governments, installing honest governments, installing an honest monetary system, all of these things. This is all very well, but the monetary system itself is alien. It's completely alien to human consciousness. Civilization is alien to human consciousness. Look at it, it's all right.
It should be all tribal.
Well, it's all right angles and buildings, and it's all disposable prefab rubbish. It's civilization itself doesn't service the needs of humankind, not in what we could be capable of doing. I just don't know how we would ever come up with this. None of this is what we should be doing. So the connection or the disconnection from nature that we've suffered is so profound that it's very difficult to see how we're going to get that back. I mean, this is why I said to someone recently that I think everyone should go and do ayahuasca. I mean, everybody should. Everybody needs to reestablish this connection with the earth, because that is why they went to such an effort to wipe out all the shaman, because it's the biggest threat that they face. Because even if we bring down this system and change it and put in a new system, it's still a system. It's still not self-responsibility. It's still not who we are. You know, at a deeper level, at a core level, if you want to get really spiritual about it. And really, this is a spiritual journey. That's what life is. It isn't about living in little boxes and collecting stuff and getting high on the social scale. It's a spiritual journey. It's a spiritual experience. It's very, very special time. It's gifted to every single piece of consciousness here. It's a very short experience, and it's special time. And what's important is what you do with it, what you do with that experience in a spiritual way. What is important is how you find yourself, what you do with others, what is your legacy for being here? What was the purpose of your life? What did you do with that time? You know, it is a spiritual experience. We have to start looking at it that way. And that's what this connection is. And that's why this was such a threat. And when you see the effort that they went to, it's extraordinary, the effort they went to stamp out shamanism. And there's the clue. And when you experience this connection to nature in somewhere like the Amazon jungle, which is one of the last places that this connection really exists, because it's one of the last areas that energy is still there. Well, it's probably everywhere, I suppose, but it's still alive and active in that area, and you can access it because of the jungle itself. When you experience this, you can see why it was such a threat. And so even if we dismantle this system and put up a new one, that's all very well. But until we get this connection back with nature, we're never going to really become who and what we are. We're always going to be running down blind alleys looking for a new way to control ourselves and to control others and to control this system. You know, we don't need a system. What we need is ourselves. We're just so far from that path. And that's what we have to find. So that's the challenge. It's a big one. It's a big hurdle, but that's the challenge that we face.
Well, you know, once you start disconnecting yourself from television and, you know, familiar mainstream radio and all the things that surround you in the mainstream world, in the civilized world, and you start reconnecting, I mean, and that's the thing, it's up to us, that personal responsibility that we have to take ourselves out of it as much as possible so that we can reconnect, because it's personal responsibility each and every one of us has to make that move to actually want to make a difference and make that change. And I think a lot of people, and something that you spoke to me about before you left Croatia, was the idea that more people are awake and more people see what's going on than we actually think, because sometimes we get a little bit discouraged in our efforts, I think.
Well, we do, and there are a lot of people that are awake. There really are. I mean, I saw pockets of resistance everywhere I went around the planet. I saw pockets of resistance. And I think the challenge that we face is really uniting these pockets of resistance. But there are people everywhere. I mean, there's a huge shift in consciousness happening. It absolutely is. So people need not think that they're alone in this battle. And I think that's the purpose of us being here. I think the purpose of us being here is to wake up. I think that we've all come here at a special time, and I think it's an opportunity. I think this is a wonderful opportunity, actually. I think it's the first time in human history we've ever had such an opportunity, because this is the first time the workings have been laid bare, the first time the mechanism has been there for all to see. And, we've got an opportunity for freedom now, and this is something that we've never had in the human experience, not in recorded history anyway. Perhaps we had freedom at some stage before this mechanical mindset took over, but, you know, when we had our right brains open the way they should be, perhaps we had freedom then when we knew who we were, But all of that is outside the recorded history. I mean, there's no record anywhere in what we know as history of humans ever having any real freedom. And so this is what we've got an opportunity to have now. This is the first time in all of our history we've had this opportunity, because we've got the mechanism there, and we're beginning to see what true freedom is, because true freedom is self-responsibility. That's what it is. And it's about time we grew up. You know, we need to take responsibility. And it's getting to a situation where it is a need. It isn't a matter that we should take responsibility for ourselves. We need to, because if we don't, we're going to lose this planet that we live on, because it's just been trashed. It's been trashed by corporate corruption. It's been trashed by a legal system which is essentially fiction. It's just rules that people make up. It doesn't really mean anything. You know, what's real is life and the planet and the people and reality. I mean, this is what's real. All of this fictional legal rubbish that gives corporations the right to destroy the planet around us and enslave the population to a system of permanent debt so they don't notice, this is not real. We don't have to go along with any of it. But the only way we can free ourselves from it is to know that and to know who and what we are. And that's the challenge that we face. That's why it's no good pointing the finger at people. It's no good pointing the finger at the government or the Illuminati or the banking cartels or anything. What you've got to do is point the finger at yourself. You've got to start knowing who and what you are and standing in that and then being free. You know, addressing these people in the right way, talking to your neighbours, breaking down all these barriers that exist. I mean, it's a huge process, of course, but this is what we have to do. It's the change that we need has got to come from the people. It's the only place it can come from. But in order for it to happen, we have to know that we're free. We have to know who we are. Big ask, but you know, that's where we're going. I think that I think we will get there.
Yeah, I honestly think that you're right. In the next 50 years, you know, we're going to look back and go, wow, did you see where we were and where we took it? I honestly feel like that's what we're on the brink of, that turning point. We've rounded that curve and the momentum swung up. And a lot of people, you know, sometimes I don't think they see all of the good that's out there, but we really do have this one in our, not necessarily in our back pockets, but the masses are waking up. They're getting it. They can't hide the garbage anymore and the industrial machine that has been destroying this fair planet, and that we've just, you know, been right alongside doing it too. Everybody's waking up to the fact that we can't be doing that anymore, and there has to be something bigger. And the idea that you're saying, which isn't an idea, it's just a fact, that we have to reconnect ourselves so that we can start anew. There's no other government to be put in place until that's done. I have to agree with you completely.
Well, yeah, integrity has no need of rules. That's the thing. You know, we don't really need government, but we need self-responsibility. If we're not responsible, then we do need government. You know, if people did what was right in all that they do, you know, not what's right for themselves personally, but just do what's right. Do the right thing in all that you do. Where's the problem? You know, and why do we allow governments to enact legislation that prevents us from doing the right thing in all that we do? I mean, we could be building adobe homes and building stuff that's all environmentally friendly and works and, you know, earthships and all this sort of stuff. We can't do it because government and council regulations prohibit people from building these type of structures because they don't meet some ridiculous building code that they put there just to mess with your life and prevent you from doing, you know, all that you could and from being all that you can be. That's all these rules are about, you know. We've got to realize that this is not why we employ governments. This is not what government is. Government are just people, same as us. And they're not doing the right thing. And the fact that we're all in such a state of hardship and struggling and having to survive by complying with all these codes shows that they're not doing the right thing. So we need to pay attention. And we need to pay attention. And we need to realize that all they are public trustees. We don't have to go along with any of it. They're just people like us. And if we are in a state where we do need to go along with it, well, perhaps we need to do something about this. Perhaps we need to change the way government works. But it's got to come from the people. It's got to come from a massive groundswell of people. But that's only going to come if the pockets of resistance that we now have start speaking out publicly and doing it politely and eloquently and doing it in the right way. You know, you can't go attacking this system. You just got to ask the right questions, do it publicly enough. And people listen and they go, well, yeah, what he said makes sense. Why don't you answer that question? And once they hear this a few times in public and a few more people start asking these questions, then people start paying attention. And, you know, slowly change the mindset of the public. That's the way we have to do it, you know?
I agree. And you know what? We're not supposed to be adversaries with anybody. Being adversarial is not the way to go about any of this. We're that proverbial good guy, bad guy thing. We're all brothers and sisters no matter what. So you don't go looking for trouble. You just talk about the solutions of what the trouble is and what's surrounding the trouble, and you make a difference in that. And that's when people catch on. To let you know, once again, we are on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. This is Lifting the Veil with Carrie Lee. I'm interviewing the wonderful Maxwell Egan today. You can see Max at thecrowhouse.com. He has a wonderful blog that will put you all through his journeys from Peru right back home to Australia. I highly suggest you all take a look at it. After this break, more with Max Egan. And we're back on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. This is Sting of Hill. I am your host, Carrie Lee, and once again, we are joined by Max Egan. Max, before the break, I was saying you have been traveling and touring all over this globe for the past 3-4 months now. After Peru and your incredible experience with ayahuasca that has us all like sitting on the edge of our seats booking our plane flights to Peru, you then headed off to Costa Rica, Spain, Portugal, Belgium throughout July. Let's talk about that a little bit. What did you experience while you were there?
Well, it's really interesting going from Peru. And in Peru, I also did... went down to Cusco and checked out Machu Picchu as well, which was quite remarkable. And I had a pretty profound experience on Machu Picchu because I went up there with the traditional owner, but that's another story. But anyway, I left Peru and I went to Costa Rica and I hooked up with an Australian lady there who wanted to go to Slovenia. She wanted to stop off at Portugal on the way because she wanted to check out an intentional community there in southern Portugal called Tamara, which is doing sort of energy devices and alternate sort of society sort of things, you know. And so we went and checked that out for a few days. And basically then headed to the World Hemp Congress in Slovenia. That was the main thing, was to go to the World Hemp Congress. So that was kind of interesting. It was, as an event, it was kind of disorganized. I mean, it was the first time any such event had ever been held, so usually you have a reasonable amount of disorganization in the first holding of these events, and I found it to be quite disorganized, and so that was good. I mean, it was a good experience. I mean, I got to meet Rick Simpson, which was great. I mean, I'd spoken to Rick quite a few times over Skype. We'd been in correspondence with each other for quite a long time, and but I'd never actually met him in the flesh. And so I got to spend 4 or 5 days with Rick Simpson in Lendava in Slovenia. And that was really good.
Yeah, that must have been something. I was able to interview Rick just before he left for Croatia. And what an interesting man. I can just imagine the two of you sitting around and chit-chatting. It must have been fantastic.
Yeah, it was good. And actually, when I left Slovenia, I went to the UK and caught up with Ben Stewart, who happened to be touring around UK at the same time I was there. It was really great, actually. Like, I went to the UK and I stayed with Ken O'Keefe, which people should know from the Mabi Mama incident, the boat that broke the Israeli blockade a few years ago, well, attempted to break the Israeli blockade. And also the Trade Not Aid mission, and there was another boat to Gaza or convoy to Gaza. There was something that happened. I can't remember the name. It escapes me at the moment. It must be the jet lag. But there was another event where a series of ships actually did, I believe, make it to the beach on Gaza. Of course, they were, you know, Israel intervened the way Israel always does. But so Ken's been involved in a few events there. He's also involved in the Human Shield operation in Iraq during Operation Shock and Awe. And so He's very, very active, and it was great to go and actually spend some time with him. I stayed at his place in London and caught up with Ben Stewart, caught up with some old friends from Australia, went and caught up with David Icke over on Isle of Wight, went to Manchester, and there was a bunch of people speaking over at Manchester. Got to meet Lloyd Pye and have a nice afternoon with him. And that was really good. So it was a great trip for connecting a lot of dots and connecting a lot of people, because you find that people such as Ken O'Keefe and Dave Icke didn't know each other, but now I know them both. So through that connection, I can link them all. And you know, Rick Simpson doesn't know Ben Stewart, but now they do. And actually,
Ben, that's brilliant.
Actually, yeah, Ben came over to Croatia, because after London, I went back to Croatia, which is where Rick was, because we went to Slovenia, then over to London, I went to Ireland, went, did a whole bunch of stuff while I was in London, and went to Egypt, went into Gaza, did all sorts of bizarre stuff, but then ended up in Croatia, and Ben was just speaking in Italy. So he met us in Trieste, Italy, and that was I flew from England to Italy, and drove from Italy through Slovenia and into Croatia with Ben Stewart, and he got to come and spend a few 4 or 5 days with Rick Simpson. So that was great. You know, so it kind of links everybody up, and that's what I've been trying to do. I want to link up as many people as possible and try to find some way of linking up all these fan bases, because, like I said, we've got pockets of resistance all over the globe, and we need a way of linking these people up. I mean, we've probably already got a critical mass, but it's just the people are unsure of how to act and what to do. And all people really have to do in their local community is lead by example in what they do. Be a good person. That's all you really have to do. Be a good person and spread this type of information. Spread the information about, that I talk about on all my shows, about fiduciary trust and all this sort of stuff. Spread it with your neighbours. Spread it with people and have conversations with people about stuff in a calm, polite, eloquent way. That's all you really have to do, so that when people do start speaking out publicly, then we already have this awareness in the local community. And there are going to be instances soon, I believe, when you're going to have people that are bringing this information to light in very public ways. When I was in Croatia, for example, I just recorded a television show for a show called The Edge of Science, which is apparently a very popular television show in Croatia. It's been going for about 10 years. It's kind of a prime time television show. And they had me on for the whole show, talking about the information that
that's
I talked
fantastic.
About.
That's so, that's so good.
Yeah, this was a mainstream television station in a country in Europe that deems the information that I bring to you on the radio shows to be worthy of giving it an hour slot on primetime television. So you're seeing this is coming to public knowledge. It's coming to people. I mean, and you'll find people such as myself, people such as Rick Simpson, people such as Ben Stewart, that will be bridging these gaps into the mainstream, even if it's just little snippets. There'll be bits that are coming in there. And, you know, all we need to know is that there is this groundswell within the community, that there is this knowledge of what we're talking about in the community. There is this groundswell, you know. So that's all people have to do in their local community. They don't have to stick their heads on the chopping block. They just have to help spread the information throughout the community in a calm and polite way, you know.
Definitely. And while you're spreading all the good information, there's also like a whole bunch of other things that you can do. Silly little things that aren't silly at all. Planting a garden and tending to the mother, you know. Being together in a community of people that are like-minded, having meetings with each other, exploring things like law, spirituality, health, because something that we've been talking about in the groups that I am fortunate enough to be a part of is that a lot of us don't take it all in all seriousness, that it's like almost the trifecta of body, mind, and spirit. You know, you have to completely connect all three of these things. You have to use your brain to its fullest capacity, your spirit to its fullest capacity, your heart. It's all something that goes together, and you have a lot of people that kind of go lean too much one way or the other way or the other way, and balance is so important in this life.
Oh, it is. It's all about balance. Balance is everything. But, you know, we're getting there. We are getting there, and it is becoming more and more mainstream. And there is a huge rise in consciousness happening. People are beginning to realize that what it's all about is self-responsibility. And, you know, unless we do take responsibility for ourselves, we aren't going to be controlled by governments. We are going to be controlled by people who really, you know, are not good custodians. They're not good trustees. And we're starting to realize that it's serious business. We have to take responsibility. We have to grow up. It's about time we did. It's about time we started acting like adults and started knowing who and what we were and what we are and what we're capable of. And you know, it's happening. So I don't despair at any of it. I think it's a pretty serious situation that we're facing, but I think that we do actually get through it. I don't think there's any way they can stop it. I mean, even if society splits into two things, you know, you end up with something like they had in the time machine. You've got the Eloi and the Morlocks, you know. I mean, even if we split into almost two different species, there's no stopping this now. There's no stopping where consciousness is going. I think that the awakening is too great that's happening around the planet. And I've seen it everywhere I've gone, every single where I've gone. And just the fact, like I said, that they're having this information on mainstream television in places in Europe. And you know, you've got a World Hemp Congress happening in Slovenia. And this is a World Hemp Congress. You know, there were political figures from all around the world that were apparently tuned into it. So, I mean, it was very disorganized, and it was actually quite a strange event at the event. I mean, there wasn't a lot of attendance at the event. There was a fair bit of online attendance. And I think a lot of it was just because it was so disorganized because they'd never done anything like it before. And Slovenia's economy isn't the best economy as well. I think it's actually about to go down the tube since that event was held. So, but there is this groundswell. There is this consciousness happening. So people must not despair. You absolutely must not. You've got to know who and what you are. No, it's going to get difficult. And of course, the more we wake up, the more difficult they're going to make it, which is going to have the effect of waking up more people. And, yeah, it's just the natural progression.
So, and with that, nothing worth having is ever easy to get. Max is loved by many of the fans, and they want him to know that. We'll be back at the top of the hour, lifting the veil with Carrie Lee on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Today's guest, once again, is Max Egan. You can check him out at thecrowhouse.com. I highly suggest his travel blog. It was really nice to kind of go on the journey with Max as he traveled, like I said, through Costa Rica, Spain, Portugal, Belgium, Slovenia, England, Ireland, Egypt, Gaza, Switzerland, back to England, Croatia, Holland, Malaysia, and then finally to rest his feet at home where he is right now. Are you enjoying being back at home?
It's good. It's nice to be here. I'm still a little jet lagged. Like, I got up at 4 a.m. this morning. It's okay. A couple of days I will have settled in. But, yeah, it's good. I mean, it's good to be here. It's kind of surreal to be here. But it is good. I mean, I just needed to come home and regroup because I've collected so much information while I was out there. I just want to come back and process it all. It's kind of created a huge workload for myself because there's at least three documentaries that I want to make now, and I've got a book that I published or put up on the website like in 2005. I had a wonderful guy send me some edits that he did for it, you know, about 2 years ago to edit all the typos out for me, and I want to take that file and edit my book and get that published so that I've got at least something because I really desperately need the income, and I want to also transcribe all my radio shows and get them published as books as well so that the info's there, so that if we lose the internet, the information's there in printed form. And so there's a whole bunch of projects I've got on that I want to get done in the next year. So it's created a huge workload for myself. And but I also want to go back to Gaza. I want to go back there next year. I was thinking about next month, going back there next month, but I'll probably go back there next year. I'll probably go and do this journey to Peru again around about March next year. I've spoken about that on other shows, and it's a thing that I've got organized. I want to go back there and make a documentary next year around about March, which means that...
Well, let's talk about that a little bit.
Well, okay. Well, yeah, I want to do that, and that would probably put me back in Gaza maybe in April or May next year. So that's probably the way things will go. But, yeah, what I want to do in March next year is I want to take a bunch of people with me down to Peru, a bunch of people that are involved in the alternative research community, and take them with me down to Peru. Rick Simpson's going to be involved. Ben Stewart is happy to be involved. Ken O'Keefe will be involved. There's a couple of radio hosts that I've spoken to that are happy to be involved as well. And so it just depends on where people are and if we can put it all together to get everybody in the right place at the right time so that we can all kind of converge on Peru. And then we'll go and we'll do a documentary basically about shamanism, about the need to preserve this culture, why it's so important, why it's such a threat to the system. And then we'll be able to sort of do a bit of that in the retreat, possibly the retreat that I went to in August. We'll probably go back to that same retreat, get them involved. And then I'll take a few select people, and there's another friend of mine who's got a maloca about 3.5 hours into the Amazon jungle. And I want to go in there and do ceremony in there, like, so you're right in the jungle, and do that with probably, you know, Ben and Ken and Rick and a couple of other people, and bring this message out to the world. See, people have to see the importance of this culture. They've got to see why it needs to be preserved. And it isn't a matter of just saving the Amazon. It's a matter of the threat that this culture poses to the control system, because it does. This knowledge of the plants and this shamanistic tradition is the biggest threat that this system faces. If people were to have an understanding of how reality actually works, because it's very, very different to what people think, then the whole system would break down. It would just decay by default. And it is. It's very different. People are trained to live in a matrix. They really are. They're enslaved to the written word. They're enslaved by their thoughts. They're controlled by what they believe reality is based on their understanding of the language. And it's completely different to what people think. And I'd probably be in jail, and men in white coats will come running to the door for me even saying that. But really, from what I've experienced and from what you can see for yourself if you really think about it, then this is the way it works. There's a need to preserve this. We cannot lose it. And one of the last places it exists is the highlands of Peru there, the Shipibo people. There's probably pockets in other countries around the area, like Brazil. There's got to be pockets of true shamanism that exist through there as well. But I know that we can get in there in Peru, because I know the land's for sale, and I know we can go and we can do something. We can make a difference, and that's what I want to try to do with this new film.
It's amazing because we're very much on the same wavelength. I'm not sure I told you in the break, I'm not sure if I mentioned on this show, I've interviewed Amanda Stock, who is working with Don Juan in Peru as well. And we will be talking more about that in the future. But Justin and I are kind of toying with the idea of going in January to do the very much the same thing, try and help instead of... There's so many, what I understand is being gringo shamans out there that are just doing a very modernized version of the Aya experience, and to keep it as real as possible so that the West doesn't infect it like it's infected everything else would be something that is a very great cause. And any footage, I'm sure we would donate to help out what you're doing as well.
Well, it'd actually be nice if you were to talk to them and see if they wanted to be involved.
This is something we can do, right? This is what we're here for, as conduits to keep that energy moving together.
I mean, it's all about collaboration and cooperation. And I mean, we're all in this together. It's not a competition. So, I'd like to get as many alternate people involved in this as possible. And I've got a really quite a large plan for where I want to go. The documentary that I make there, it'll be something that everybody can get involved in. So I don't really want to talk about that point too much until I kind of unveil it. But sure. This is kind of what I got in ceremony, that I needed to do this. And the more people I can link up together, I think we have a real opportunity to make a real difference and set a real example that can be used to apply to other issues that we face as well. So It's a big thing for me. It's a really important thing that I want to do this film. This next one will be the most important film I've done.
Definitely, and it's something that's so important that we're standing side by side and to show that everybody's side by side standing in this to make these differences. And anybody that can help support Max in this is for everybody.
Well, yeah. So yeah, try to get everybody involved. So have a talk to them. The people at this retreat you want to go into, maybe they'll be able to do something in March. Maybe we can all get involved.
That would be fantastic. See, and this is just coming from doing a radio show and connecting to each other and realizing, hey, look at we're kind of on the same wavelength. Let's do more with it. Let's combine it. And this is how it works, though, right? This is exactly how it works. I know Justin's listening to the show, and he's the editor for Lifting the Veil, for those listeners that don't know. And I know he's kind of like just probably freaking out and jumping up and down because we were just talking about making this trip just this week. So to have Max on the show right now talking about the exact same thing that we're trying to plan in our own way is just that further affirmation that, yep, we're all on the right path going to do the right things. Beautiful.
Well, yeah, you're talking about February. I'm talking about March. You know, it's only 4 weeks apart, so
you might as well just wait.
Might as well do it in March. I mean, if you look at the wet season and stuff around through Peru, you might be better off waiting until March anyway. You know? It's kind of the floods sort of start to go down a bit. And it just depends, of course, but it's kind of, it can get a bit murky and floody around there over Christmas and those sort of months. So
yeah, during the wet, you don't want to necessarily be there for sure. A quick question before we go to our first break in the last hour. What prompted you to finally show your face? All these years, Max has been hidden behind the microphone, and now we get to see your wonderful face. What prompted you to go that way? I know that in one of the videos with Ken O'Keefe, even he had mentioned, you know, you've been behind the camera for so very long.
Well, it isn't something that I wanted to do. I mean, it's a bit disappointing, really, to be honest. I mean, I kind of enjoyed my anonymity. I enjoyed the game of being anonymous. I find that when people's faces are revealed, very often their information is surrounded by a cult of personality, if you will. Depending whether you're good-looking or whether you're ugly or whatever, it's irrelevant how you look. What's relevant is that you look in some way and your people associate your message with how you look, which is what we do. People haven't been able to do that with my message. They haven't been able to associate it with what I look like. The reason it's happened now is because it wanted to happen. A lot of the reasons why I didn't show my face was because of the whole cult of personality issue and because it isn't about me. It's about the information. It's about the message that I'm bringing to you. It isn't about me. And once I did the World Hemp Congress, there were television cameras and there were video cameras and there was, you know, people everywhere. And so I thought, well, obviously this is going to get videoed and someone's going to post something. You know, it's unavoidable. The only way I can stop that is if I was to go out and talk to everybody here with a camera and say, look, I would like you not to post anything of me. And if I was to do that, then suddenly my need to preserve my anonymity is preventing the flow of information. So it has now become about me. Okay? It's become about my anonymity in this game that I'm playing. And so it was never about me. And so if I was to impede the flow of this, then it becomes about me. So obviously this is happening because it wants to happen. There's nothing I can do about it. If I'm going to go to somewhere like the World Hemp Congress and speak publicly, I have to expect that this is going to happen. And then suddenly I'm on Croatian television. And I'm in the national newspaper in Croatia as well. There's a lift-out section that I can I'll scan and I'll put it on the next radio show or something. I'll show you a picture of it. But, yes, so it just happened because I wanted it to happen. And like I said, it was never about me. And you see what I'm saying? If I'd stopped it, then it would have been about me. And so I was shown, basically, like this trip, it just manifested. Okay, you've got to go public now. And not only that, it's going to happen, see? And that's it. There's absolutely nothing I could do about it. So that's okay. That's just the way it is. You know, it's I proved my point. Now people can maybe see that I'm real, and actually I'm not some voice program or something, you know. like I said, I mean, I'm nothing special. It doesn't matter what I look like. You don't have to. It's just, you know, I'm just like a really average, a homely sort of guy that you just pass on the street. You know, it's just a nobody. See, it isn't about being anybody. It's about speaking. You know, you don't have to be somebody to have a voice. You've just got to be prepared to speak. And so that's what it was kind of always about. So, yeah, it just happened because I wanted to happen. But, yeah, it was a little disappointing. I loved my anonymity, but, well, that's the way it goes.
Yeah, I can't go back now. I think that the people in the chat rooms don't necessarily agree with your assessment of yourself as being homely, but we'll let it go. because there's you're absolutely adorable, and that's just my two cents. Speaking of chat rooms, I'm not courageous enough yet to take calls in this. I really like the way that the shows go. So I invite everybody to listingtheveil.ca, where you can join the chat room there. There are several people in there right now. Loverhead, Reinhardt, Sethra, Kimmy, Wakey Wakey, Debt Free, Wunny Dumpling, Wookie Bum, Red, and Leo. Thank you all for being in there. They've got some questions that will come. Actually, there's one that we can ask right now. I don't see why that would be a problem. We've got a few minutes till break. But, yeah, anybody who does have any questions, please come on and visit liftingtheveil.ca. Go to the chat room, and we can chit-chat in there. Now, Reinhard asks, please ask Max if we should avoid or use the courts and the other legal tools like lawsuits, liens, and such. We've got about 4 minutes.
Look, you know, it's a hard one. I mean, I'd like to say just avoid the whole lot, but I mean, it's difficult. I don't know enough about liens and all of these sorts of things. I mean, I just operate from a perspective of trust in all that I do. That's the way I approach it when I deal with these people. Admittedly, I don't really deal with them that much though, because I just don't attract that energy. It just doesn't happen. I mean, I don't know why. I speak out the way I do, but when I have been with these people, I've always spoken to them in the way that I've mentioned on my shows. I've just always looked at it from a perspective of trust. I've been polite and honourable in what I do, and I just always walk away. So I don't really know. I mean, I think it's beneficial to look at all of these things because it educates you on how the system works. And in order to defend yourself, if you're going to use their legal system, if you're going to use anything and any loopholes and you know, extricate yourself from the system by using what is available within it, then you have to go down this path in order to know this stuff, because you have to know it. You've got to know it inside out. You can't get someone to come and stand for you. If you're going to stand there in court and you're going to claim that you have jurisdiction over yourself and you're going to go down the path of bans and all of this sort of thing, then you damn well better know what you're talking about. You better know your stuff, because you have to be honourable. You have to be responsible for your actions. So it's a path that I think some people excel at it. Some people, they go there and it's like a fish to water. They just love it. And they go there and they don't get cocky. And that's the worst thing, is getting a little bit of information, getting cocky and going in there and getting yourself in trouble. You know, but I mean, it all serves a purpose. But if your mind works that way and you think you can really get a handle on this and you can enter into the system, enter into that pond and battle the fish within it from within their environment, then go for it. To me, I say it's all fiction. The whole lot of it is fiction. We made the whole thing up. And if I am subject to any of your legislation, well, okay, well, that could be possible. But let's see where you got the ability to create that legislation. You only got that because of the trust agreement that exists with me. You know, because this is a relationship of fiduciary trust. Even the Prime Minister of my country recently said she's a public trustee. That's what government is. They're public trustees. You know, so it's just a different way of looking at it.
I agree with you completely. We'll touch a little bit more after the break on American Freedom Radio. Everything that Max and I are discussing right now, it's pretty amazing to be living in these times, I would say. When Max said earlier that you know, we all came here for a reason kind of type thing. We almost like we had a choice and we knew we were going to be here in this moment and we had things to do, work to do. And I have to say I'm happy to be doing it and quite happy to be standing at the sides of so many people, both in front of a microphone or a camera or away from all of you. All of you, I am so blessed. Now, with all that gushing being over and done with, welcome back, Max.
Nice to be back, Carrie.
Now, I have to talk about the video where yourself and Ken O'Keefe were talking about Patrick Claussen's suggestion of using the false flag event needed to initiate conflict with Iran. I giggled my ass off, excuse my language, through that entire segment because I watched it the exact same way as the two of you did with all of the little side notes. Kind of when I watched it with my husband, I was kind of smacking him in the arm going, see, I said that. So what inspired the two of you to hack away at it? And we're all very happy that you did.
Well, I mean, what do you say to a clip like that? I mean, I thought it was The Onion. When I first saw it, I thought it was The Onion. I thought, there's no way this is real. Ken showed it to me. He said, what do you think of this, Max? I went, there's no way that's real. And I had to watch it a couple of times, and we're going, it's real. And Ken's gone, you know, we should do a little thing. We should just do a quick analysis of it. Yeah, all right. Yeah, okay, we'll do that. And it was all first takes. We just went out on the roof and we just did it. And the reason we walk away from the camera each time was because we kept going back to it. We had the laptop sitting over there on the thing. We'd play one sentence. And you know, okay. Yeah, then we'd walk back and we'd say something about that sentence, and we'd walk back and we'd play the next sentence, and we'd walk back to the camera and we'd say it again. You know. So.
And there was just so much information to use. You had so much material to work with.
Well, it's amazing everything that he said in that speech. And it's right there. And look at the response. What, 26,000 views on that clip? I mean, there should be millions of views on that clip. People should be paying attention to what's being said to them. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they're telling you right there, we're going to stage false flag attacks, folks. That's what we're going to do. We've been trying. We can't initiate this crisis with Iran. We can't see how the president is going to get us to war, and if compromise is not company, then perhaps it would be best if someone else started the war. You know, maybe they might lose one of their submarines. I mean, who would know? Who would know why? I mean, we do these things all the time. I'm not advocating that we do any of this stuff, but hey, you know, I mean, they're just telling you that, look, it's getting out of control. This war isn't going to start. We've been trying to kickstart this war with Iran, this crisis with Iran, for years now. Iran isn't taking the bait. We're doing what we're doing in Gaza. We've been brutalizing these Arab people for years on end, and the Arab nations still aren't reacting the way we want them to. So perhaps we just need to do something to kickstart this war. And that's what he was saying. And this is a Jewish lobbyist. I mean, what's wrong with people? I mean, wake up. You know, can't you see? This is right here, folks. I'm not saying that they're going to do this. This is what they're saying that they should do. And so we thought there was a need to do that. We thought, well, you know, once we started looking at it, it was hilarious because we thought it was like The Onion. So that's why our little presentation about it came across as somewhat comical as well. We did that clip because there was just a need to bring this to the faces of people. I mean, here they are right there telling you what they're going to do, and people just aren't paying attention. So we did the clip. And also, just because we were in Gaza, I mean, we kind of felt the need to do a video clip because we were in Gaza, and the way we got into Gaza may not have been the most responsible thing that I've ever done in my life. But and we kind of got in there, and once we got in there, we thought, well, look, here we are in Gaza, and it's probably a good idea to make a video clip and to put it out there and to let people know that here we are, because, you know, you're sort of in an area that's kind of a dangerous area, and so we figure that it's the best thing to do. So that's what we did. And it was interesting to see the response of the clip, but again, it's very, very demonstrative of what these people plan to do. I mean, they're very, very desperate to kickstart this war with Iran. And so that's what they're doing. And they're prepared to stage false flag attacks to do it. And that's what they're saying that they're prepared to do in this very video clip. And you've got to really look at the what's going on here. I mean, look at the significance of this. This is a public press conference. There's a public press conference, and there's people there with video cameras. This is being videoed, and they know it's being videoed, and yet they're standing in front of a video camera, and they're reeling off all these false flag events that they've already staged and telling you that they need to stage another one, or they might need to stage another one in order to kickstart this crisis with Iran because the president's having a hard time doing it. But, of course, I'm not advocating that we do that. I mean, it's right here. It's right here in your face, folks. So if people can't see what's going on from a clip like that, then I don't know what it's going to take to make them pay attention. And, you know, I think that that's the purpose of Gaza. I really do. I think that the brutality and the inhumanity that's being inflicted upon the Palestinian people is being done purely to enrage the Arab world. And to be quite honest, I think that even if there are suicide bombers, which there may be at times, you know, if you push someone far enough, they will react in this way. That's just the way it is. If you brutalize someone time and time and time again, they will end up being dehumanized and they will react that way. And I would suggest that after what has been done to the Palestinian people, then the Arab world has shown remarkable restraint in their reaction to what's been done. And I wouldn't even for a moment suggest that things like 9/11 are demonstrative of this either, because I don't believe that 9/11 was staged by Arabs. I don't think that they had anything to do with it. And I just don't think that anything we've been told about the whole region is true. My time there was quite remarkable. I found the Palestinian people to be very friendly and very, very warm and very communal type of people. They really were. Everywhere I went, people were giving me cups of tea. They were all very excited to see a Westerner. And so I found it very, very memorable, my time in Palestine, and I do intend to go back there. As I said earlier, I was hoping to go back there in November, but I probably won't be able to do that. So I will probably go back there after I do this documentary filming in Peru next year, which I'm hoping to get accomplished around about March. But for anybody else who is listening and wondering when I will be back on the air, probably around about mid-November I will go back on. I'll give myself a couple of weeks, I think, just to regroup now that I'm home. Just to process the information that I've collected along the way. It was a very, very interesting journey. I mean, after the whole Peru and Slovenia thing, to go to England and then to go to a place in Ireland called Newgrange, there was a lovely, lovely lady called Ruth Kelly, who might be listening to this somewhere out there, who invited me over to Ireland for a couple of days to meet everybody over there. It was fantastic. I met her at one of Ben Stewart's talks in Manchester. And she took me over there. I met her lovely family and the friends that she has. And we went out to Newgrange and saw the sites at Newgrange. And Newgrange is quite a fascinating place. It's one of the oldest, if not the oldest, structure that exists anywhere. It's very, very significant and very telling. And I think it's an integral part of the control system that was put in place, I think. I've been really viewing all of the ancient monuments and all of the structures on this planet in a very different way since going and doing ceremony in Peru on the way. That's something that it very much changed for me, this whole ceremony thing. It gave me a completely different way of looking at things. I mean, I didn't realize it, but before I'd done ceremony, I was still looking at monuments and I was still looking at these structures in a very left-brain way. Even though I try to look at things holistically, I try to be aware of whether I'm in left-brain or whether I'm thinking about things holistically, I was still thinking about things in a left-brain way.
Max, a little message from Ireland from Ruth, who said that you had stayed with her while you were in Ireland. She sends her love and hopes you're well.
Yeah, I actually just mentioned her. She took me into Newgrange, and that was a remarkable insight, actually, seeing what's going on in Newgrange. And then going to from there a couple of weeks a couple of days. I think actually the next day I left Ireland. I flew back to London. Then the very next morning, I got back to London at 11:30 at night, and I got up at 5 o'clock the next morning and flew to Egypt, and that was straight after Newgrange. So that was very, very interesting seeing the comparison, and they're all connected energetically. You find that Newgrange and Stonehenge and Egypt are all connected energetically. So I started to formulate this idea in my mind of what all these monuments are really all about. And to be honest, I don't think any of them perform any good purpose at all. I'm looking at things from a completely different perspective than what I was, simply because of the ceremony that I did at the start of the journey. Because, as I said, when I got that connection to the earth, I got that actual connection to nature, the higher senses kicked in, and I started to experience all of reality. It gave me a completely different way of looking at things. And I didn't even realize until up to that point that I'd been looking at all these monuments and all these structures in a very left-brain way. I've been fascinated by the astronomical significance of all these structures, how they had all these alignments, and what was the obsession with the zodiac, and why all of this stuff was the way it is, you know. But now I'm looking at things from a completely different perspective. I'm looking at it from a perspective of more like celestial mechanics and geometry and energetic principles in relation to mathematics and geometry and celestial mechanics. So that's a completely different way of looking at the purpose of all of these structures. But really, if you step back and you think about it, I think that's the way they need to be looked at. So that's something that I'll probably have to make another documentary all about.
There's just no end to the amount of work that we can do to just keep delving down the rabbit holes. And it's not even rabbit holes anymore. I feel like we're climbing out of things. I don't feel like we're digging down deep into things. I think we're climbing out. The more holes that we reveal are... excuse me, the more that we dig and the more that we find, it just seems that we're digging our way out to the light. I don't feel like we're in any rabbit hole anymore. I guess we'll talk about that more after the break. And we are joined by Max Egan again on Lifting the Veil with Carrie Lee. You can see us if you want to check out our YouTube channel, Lifting Veils, and our website is www.liftingtheveil.ca. With Max at the Crow House, that is thecrowhouse.com. Max, just to top off, any last words on your time in Ireland and Dublin?
Well, yeah, like the trip to Newgrange was pretty remarkable. Like I said, what I saw there was basically an energy device. That's what I believe Newgrange to be. I think it was a device that was possibly helped to even reshape human consciousness, you know, or help reshape human consciousness. I think that there are other devices on the planet that help do this. There are certain people that would suggest or have suggested that... the roots of civilization lie in Ireland. And I would suggest that could well be true. But the question is, does civilization actually serve any real purpose for humankind? Is civilization a good thing, per se? Because what I experienced with the plants in Peru would suggest that it isn't. I mean, it doesn't seem to serve our purpose in any way at all. So something else in Ireland, when I was there after Newgrange, we went to the cathedral in Dublin. I think it's St. Michael's or St. Patrick's, or I don't know, I can't remember. Christchurch Cathedral, that's it. Okay, that's the one. I'm very, very vague, folks, I'm still jet-lagged. So we went to that cathedral, and what you see in the cathedral is exactly the same layout as what was in Newgrange. Basically, you've got the Holy of Holies, you've got the three alcoves, you've got the cathedral roof, all that. And very significantly, around the stained glass windows of this particular cathedral is the story of how they locked down human consciousness. It's quite remarkable. In the main hall, like the base of the cross, if you will, of the shape of the cathedral, because they're all sort of cross-shaped, crucifix-shaped, the actual shaft of the cross section of the cathedral I was there with Ruth Kelly, and she said, "Oh, what does this mean?" And she's looked at the we've looked at the window, and I said, "Well, to me, I see this." And you know, we moved to the next one. And I went, "Okay, oh, and this one I see this." And we moved to the third one. I went, "Oh, and this one I see this." And I'm thinking, "Hang on, these are all telling a story." And I said, "Come back and we look. Here's the first one. They're showing this, and the second one shows this, and the third one shows this." And then you walk around the whole building from right to left, and you're seeing the story of how they disconnected us from nature, how they shut down our pineal gland, how they enslaved us to religion, how they controlled our psyche through fear and war, and used the church to control and indoctrinate us, the education system, the use of children, the torment of the children, the slavery, like, it was all there. It's all right there in the stained glass windows and the statues. If you follow the journey around here, you see how civilization was built, how our civilization was built. It's all there in the stained glass windows. And so I would suggest that, yes, probably it is a good possibility that civilization did begin in Ireland, rather than in Sumer or what you would expect. But it only began in Ireland because of Newgrange. Newgrange created, I believe, some sort of a schism. They did something. There was something that happened with this place that was used to create some sort of energetic rift. And I believe that was very likely amplified by Stonehenge, because it points directly to Stonehenge. And Stonehenge is in a direct alignment with the three pyramids of Giza. And I believe that the pyramid of Giza was also part of this energy device. I believe all these three places to be connected. And this whole thing was used to create some sort of a schism, some sort of a rift in human consciousness. And even all of the data that's in the pyramids, I mean, even when you look in my book that I wrote in 2005, I'm suggesting that the pyramid was some sort of an energy device, but it contained all of this knowledge so that we would know there was a civilization back there that had all of this knowledge. And that's the way I looked at it back then, because that's the way I was thinking with my left brain. It was all about knowing all of this data. But I never asked the question, why would we need the data? Why would we seek to know the distance between here and the sun? And all? Why is it important? How is it important to us enjoying our lives to the fullest extent and getting to know who we are to the fullest extent? Why is it necessary for us to have this information? You know, it's not something that's natural to us. So where did our need to get all of this type of knowledge come from? You know, why did our minds become the way they are? And I look at the pyramid and I'm thinking, well, all of the astronomical data that's in the Great Pyramid in Giza, all of this, well, sure, I mean, all of the mathematical and celestial mechanics of this whole solar system virtually are contained within the measurements of the pyramid. It's remarkable. But then they covered the whole thing over with limestone, so you couldn't see any of it. So why would they build a structure to leave data for us to tell us about all that they knew all this stuff and then cover it over with limestone so we couldn't see it? It didn't even get discovered until a pilot flew over it in the 1940s or something. And saw that the pyramids actually have dents in the sides of the walls. There's all these different measurements that you can get. So I believe that it was constructed that way because if you're creating an energy device, if this is an energetic universe, an energetic reality, an energetic solar system that's all based on celestial mechanics, mathematics and geometry, which it is, you know, sacred geometry, you know, Fibonacci sequence, phi ratio, it's in everything. It's all based on mathematical and geometric principles. If you wanted to create an energy device that was going to affect this energetic plane, then you would need to create a device that contained elements of all of these celestial principles within a device. That's what I believe the pyramid is. That's the perspective that I've gained from this synchronistic journey that started off with me doing ceremony in Peru and then led me through all of these cultures and ended up culminating with me going to Ireland, to Newgrange, which wasn't even on the agenda, from a chance meeting from a woman I met at a talk in Manchester, which I wasn't even going to go to. I only went there because my friend Ben Stewart was talking there, and I thought, oh, why not? I'll go and see Manchester. Met a lady there, lovely lady. She ends up inviting me over to Ireland for a couple of days. Happens to be really close to Newgrange. I go there. I get this energy from Newgrange, and I'm thinking this place has been used for something remarkable and something really devious. The energy in there was palpable. Spiral shapes everywhere and all this stuff, and really primitive, really ancient, and hidden underneath a hill. So I can see it's there. I build this little structure like a church and this cathedral mentality and get... I can see how this place could have been used to completely alter human consciousness. That's the feeling that I got when I was there. And then I find out, I go out and I think, I bet this has got something to do with Stonehenge. And you go and trace a line of the shaft of the cross on Newgrange, the line of the tunnel, out straight out the door from where the chamber is in the inside Newgrange, straight out the door, it hits the centre of Stonehenge, right there, connected. That's exactly where it's pointing. So there's your first amplifier. Based on these, and then you've got all these astronomical principles in Stonehenge, and then Stonehenge is in direct alignment with the three pyramids in Giza. And there you've got, you go to Cairo, and Cairo's crazy. The energy there is just, it's convoluted. It's a really convoluted energy field. The people are lovely, but it's just a crazy energy. It's a crazy town. It's convoluted energy. I could just feel it. I could really feel this. And it's also the center of the Earth's landmass. So if you're going to create an energy device that's going to affect human consciousness, you do it at the center of the landmass because you're going to reach more people that way. And I believe that's what it was. I don't think that there's any good in any of these structures. I think that these structures were part of a device that was used to change the energy field on this planet, in this reality. And I know that probably sounds very far-fetched for people, but having experienced what I experienced in these ceremonies, And bearing in mind that these ceremonies, this shamanistic culture was the biggest threat that ever stood against this system, which is why they went to that extraordinary amount of effort to stamp it out. Now I'm seeing I'm seeing a bigger picture that I didn't see before. Anyway, I put it that way.
Well, thank you, because honestly, you've just opened up something in me that makes a lot of sense. With the elite are always making these amazing complexes to harness all of their energy, so to speak, right? Now, here in Winnipeg, for those that don't know, I just moved here with my family in May. There is the Manitoba Legislative Building that is built exactly to spec of King Solomon's tomb or temple. I'm telling you, the place, that nothing good happens there. And the energy that is in the city is just incredible. Now, it doesn't mean that Stonehenge wasn't the exact same thing, but for that time.
Well, it contains all of this astronomical data, and we don't need it. Why would we need it? What purpose does it serve for us to be living our lives in harmony with nature? And if we had our higher senses, I mean, see, this is the thing. When we look at this, we think, well, we want this because we have inquisitive minds. We want to know things. But what I'm saying is, why do we have these inquisitive minds? Why are our minds so oriented to left brain? Because the connection that I had with the plants show me that there's a whole different way of looking at things. And if we were living in harmony as custodians of this planet, I mean, if you were a child growing up in the woods, left to your own devices to live in harmony with the world that you grew up into, you wouldn't build civilization. You wouldn't be looking for astronomical data. You wouldn't even be thinking in that way. So
it's not important.
Yeah, it's not important. It makes no sense. What your relationship is the earth and the sky and the air and the sun. This is who you are as humanity, you know.
And to fully live in that. To fully connect back into that. Because there is no need for any of the... as I sit here at my laptop and microphone. Oh, Max, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Carrie.
Promise me that you'll come back soon.
I will, sure.
Wonderful. For everybody that's been listening, it has been another fantastic Saturday afternoon interview here at Lifting the Veil with Carrie Lee, live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Again, our YouTube channel, Lifting Veils, our website, www.liftingtheveil.ca. Ah, what a good show it's been today. Thank you all for listening.